Hello, everybody. It's George from Ireland. So welcome back to my channel and talking about Putin's presser. This is an annual event being going on for around 20 years. So this is a press conference. I think he cancelled it once in coronavirus, but come live phone in, where anyone in Russia has the right to phone in and supposedly by chance, they'll be plucked and that's it. And he'll deal with their problems. Now, he's handled this in a bravura manner on many occasions. These things stretched to almost 5 hours. This one was relatively brief, a bit over 4 hours. He's become less adept at this, finds it a bit tedious. His stock answers, they're really wearing thin. And quite often he said he's got no news, he's got nothing new to say, if you watch it. And no, I didn't see the whole thing, but I have seen clips of it. And I have comments flashing up on the screen around him of the things that people were supposedly asking. There were things that were not, that he didn't actually answer, because he can only answer he answered about 70 questions in those 4 hours and some odd minutes. And there were very pointed ones like, when do I get to live in the Russia I see on television? Because so much is in Russian, it is a Potemkin village. You go back to Catherine the Great in the 18th century, perhaps the greatest Tsarina Russia ever had, and she was German. But Potemkin was one of her aristocratic lovers because her husband had the mind of a three-year-old. And to impress her on some visit to southern Russia, probably what's now Ukraine, he had these bogus villages made, just these, well, cardboard almost, looking very attractive and impressive. And so that's a Potemkin village, a complete facade when you fake things. Because yes, in downtown Moscow and St. Petersburg, things are lavish, even luxurious. But for the average Russian living in the countryside, you know, things have hardly improved in 30 years. The money is very heavily concentrated in the two major cities. About 12% of Russians are middle class by Western standards. Most are working class, and something like 20% live below Russia's official poverty line. In reality, it'd be considerably higher, maybe 30%. So the minimum wage in Russia is something like $150 a month. So, wow, that's very bad. You wouldn't get very far on that. As they say, you couldn't even feed a cat on that in Russia. Anyway, the so-called special military operation that Russia's objectives remain unchanged. They will fight it on until Ukraine capitulates. But remember, he said it's just denazification, demilitarization, and Ukraine must never, ever join NATO. He didn't mention the European Union, because remember, just the day before, and maybe this is timed deliberately for that reason, was a bit of a blow to Putin that, accession talks with Ukraine are going to commence. Now, I wouldn't bait my breath if I were the Ukrainians. Remember, who is it? North Macedonia's been waiting since 2005. Turkey's been waiting since 1987. Now, admittedly, it's frozen with Turkey because of the attempted coup, because Erdogan's turning it into an authoritarian state and so forth. So if Ukraine gets to join at all, it wouldn't be for at least 5 years. I think 10 years is more realistic. There are several countries higher up the queue: North Macedonia, Albania, Kosovo, Serbia. Am I missing a few? Anyway, so that is still going on. But he had to deal with all sorts of shortages which are going on, and didn't really have convincing answers. But the very difficult, embarrassing questions were not put to him. This was not as masterful as some of the previous editions of his presser, and it usually takes place around this time of year. And they invited the few Western journalists left in Moscow, including the redoubtable Stephen Rosenberg, who's a BBC's veteran. He's been there for about 30 years. I know some of the Russians who work for the BBC have been gone out of the country because it's too risky for them. They've been labeled foreign agents. They could be cooling their heels in Lubyanka for decades on completely trumped up charges. Even if the Federal Security Services knows for certain these people are completely innocent, they might be still thrown in the slammer. So you daren't taint yourself by associating with the least dissent. It's a sort of a Michael Gove vision of things, how he'd like to see it, that champion of the free press. Anyway, Putin said he is open to negotiating with the Ukrainians. And what's there to parley about? Remember, he doesn't say he wants more to Ukrainian land. Okay, he does want it, but he's not going to say that. Remember, when he declared the so-called special military operation, he vowed that Russia was not claiming a millimeter of Ukrainian territory. Well, ha, ha, ha. Since then, they've claimed to absorb four more territories besides Crimea, which they claim to absorb already. Remember, he vowed that no conscripts will be sent to fight in Ukraine. Well, tens of thousands have been sent to fight in Ukraine, and on, lie after lie after lie. So he wants to parley with the Ukrainians. And very early in the war, there were negotiations hosted by Belarus. And of course, Belarus is really just Russia's lackey. Or another case facilitated by the Turks. It took place in Istanbul. And where else could it take place? Again, a country is relatively trusted by both sides. Kazakhstan might be a possibility. But yeah, we shall see. The UAE, Saudi Arabia, one of those. Anyway, so that's what he's trying to achieve. Why is he even mentioning talks? Partly war weariness. The war's not going terribly well for Russia. He did say Russia's strategic position is improving. In fairness to him, that is correct. It is. Very minor gains around Avdiivka, and the Ukrainians not managed to push forward when they just crossed over the Dnipro River. It's very difficult to sustain these operations across the river. You know, I hasten to underscore that I've never been a military man. And there was some ado about this. Was this going to be a breakthrough? But no, it appears not to be. You only get so many boats across the river providing you munitions. And the main thing is the Ukraine is just running out of munitions. Remember, Ukraine's Western allies said they provide 1 million shells this year. They provided about 500,000. So the Ukrainians are having to really think carefully about everyone they fire. They can't afford to waste them. Now, obviously, they tend to be more accurate than the Russian munitions. But nevertheless, this is very risky for them. You know, eventually, they're going to be down to throwing stones. So if things continue on this trajectory, Russia's got a high chance of victory. Not soon, several months, maybe even a couple of years. But unless the West really ups its game in providing a lot more munitions, how can the Ukrainians possibly compete with Russia that outnumbers them 3.5 to 1? And okay, on the battlefield, they're there. Their numerical advantage is not that high, maybe 2 to 1. But in terms of munitions, it'd be much higher than that. And, you know, the Ukrainians don't have air superiority. I was thinking about this, the United States advising the Ukrainians about their offensives and so on, or counteroffensives. And since air power has been a factor in war, okay, the Turkish-Italian war of, when was it, 1911, that's mattered. But, you know, since the first air war the United States fought was the First World War, where aviation was a factor for the USA. And they've had air superiority in that war in every single war the United States has ever fought since then. People are always saying it's very difficult to launch these conventional offensives or counteroffensives if you don't have air cover. And the Ukrainians have to do it without air cover, which has been a really inhibiting factor. And the F-16s, when are they going to arrive in a few months? But is it enough of them to make the difference? So that's why things are actually looking up for Putin, even though the victory won't be quick or maybe dramatic. But he says there's 617,000 Russian troops serving in Ukraine, which is probably an exaggeration. He said there shan't be another draft. Lie. You can bet your bottom dollar there will be, but it'll be after St. Patrick's Day next year. Not because it's Paddy's Day, because that is when the presidential election is going to take place. But he's just putting it back beyond then. Because yes, of course, it's a charade. Yes, they're going to cheat, but he prefer not to cheat too blatantly, like Lukashenko did in August 2020, and cause mass unrest, which came close to toppling Lukashenko, because the Russians were able to step in and prop up the tyrant. Who's going to be able to come to the aid of Putin? I don't see China or any other country intervening to try and save him. Now, I don't think that's imminent. I don't think Putin's going to be overthrown at all, actually, much though I'd like him to be. But I could be wrong. There's more desertion. We saw what happened with the Wagner Group. Is some general going to try and do this? But Putin's put yes men. He values canine loyalty over competence, which is partly why they perform so poorly in Ukraine. And Gerasimov has not been dismissed despite his plan failing. We go on. So Putin also hinted he'd like to see Trump coming back, saying that when internal changes happen, they start respecting other countries. He said that in relation to the United States. And he also mentioned the Americans who are incarcerated in the United States, Paul Whelan, Evan Gershkovich, saying, okay, they could be set at liberty if concessions made in the United States. He declined to go into the particulars of that one. So some sort of deal being worked out has happened with Brittany Griner. Anyway, he voiced his disappointment that Israel shan't permit Russia to establish a hospital in Gaza to treat the many wounded Palestinian civilians. So he claimed that Russia's gross domestic product grew 3.5% this year, which again is probably an exaggeration, but I didn't think any doubts that it has grown, even as in 1.5%. So the sanctions have been less effectual than most people forecast, including myself. But he admits that inflation's 8.5%. Again, it's probably higher than he says. You know, you never believe a word he says. The truth is always a bit worse for Russia than he pretends. But anyway, inflation is forecast to get worse. Growth is going to go down. They've got all sorts of longer term demographic problems, which is accelerated by this war in Ukraine. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal to georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.